Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast-track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is episode number 16 of the Driving Eureka podcast, the feature article, Why Do Adults Allow Themselves to Get Stupid as They Age? Question mark. The Driving Eureka book segment will be exploring stimulus, and then the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy, using learning as a secret weapon, and we'll also do the craft cocktail, which is the whiskey sour. So, Doug, before you start in on why do adults allow themselves to get stupid as they age, I got to tell you one of the things that we used to say in our family all the time, which is don't ever call anybody stupid because the only thing that ends stupidity is death. You can call them ignorant, don't call them stupid. So, with that set up, why did you choose that particular word?
Well, I don't care about the words. I was just frustrated when I was writing this. I had seen a couple of people, and okay, so I turned 60. Okay, and a number of people were talking to me. Because I have a number of friends who are of the same era, and most of them were pretty cool. They were talking about adventures and things they were doing, but there were a few people who were just talking about, yeah, we're settling down, we're slowing down, we're doing this stuff. And I said, well, I can't do this. Or they were talking about, you know, I'm starting this crazy whiskey business, and they're like, I don't know how you have the energy to do that. You know, and, or I was talking about computers, and it's just, you know, you hear people talking and they say, I can't do this. It's just too much, or I'm too old for it. And I've just had it, you know, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, my grandmother took a computer class. She was 88 at the time. 88. She's taking a computer class. Okay. And this is like, you know, this is like 20 years ago. Okay. And I said, what are you doing? And she's like, well, I don't want to miss anything. Seems like computers are going to be important. Now that's the attitude. That's the attitude. You know, you're not too old till you're dead, as you say there. Mm. And it's time for us to all embrace never ending learning. We've got to open ourselves up to learning. Life is meant to be lived and discovered, and new adventures. But we have this tendency to just close ourselves down, and, you know, and, you know, we take classes, we tell students to try new things, we tell our kids, our grandkids to try things, and ourselves, oh, no, I don't do that. Oh, you mean a new cocktail? No, I don't do cocktails. Oh, I drink scotch, I don't drink bourbon. Oh, have you tried the new single barrels? Oh, no, don't drink them. Get over yourself. You'll be missing a whole lot of this stuff. So I was, you know, I don't know if it was a reaction to my birthday, or whether it was just a general sense of my grandmother speaking to me. But it's time for us to not allow ourselves that as we age to just not do. I mean, the internet's amazing. Science is making new discoveries. Let's get involved.
There's the, you know, we touched upon this a little bit before, you know, on this frustration of, and some of it is perpetuated, I think, by TV ads. You know, have you saved enough for retirement? Are you going to be retiring soon? You know, and that has a totally different operational definition for, I think, you and I than it would for most people. You know, you know, we talked about this before too. I think organizations kind of beat you down. And that's one of the things that I like about the Driving Eureka book and innovation engineering is the fact that not only is it a renewal of the company, but it's a renewal of a person being able to go through and, you know, new ideas spark energy. I mean, that they in essence give you a reason to sit there and say, "Gah, you know, this is something new and different, and it keeps me, you know, it keeps me energized and keeps me going." And you know, I'm hoping that people aren't taking that attitude of, "Well, I'm going to retire now." And I think a lot of it is people just got beaten up so much from working in boring organizations for a number of years, and they're tired of getting beaten up, and I can't wait to get out of here.
Hey, my last 3 or 4 years at Procter & Gamble, a very conservative company, you know, proper and prudent organization. I don't think the organization makes you that way. You accept that.
Mm.
I mean, I pushed the edges. I mean, I had a team, and we would just push the edges with things. And what we found is we could do more and more and more. I mean, they put out a rule that said it was going to be casual Fridays, if you can imagine this back in the old days. You wouldn't have to wear a suit. You could. I remember a time at Procter & Gamble where a buddy of mine got sent home because he had a sport coat on, not a suit coat. You know, and I'm like going, Jesus, this is a bit severe. And so they decide they're going to have casual Fridays, you know, but there would be no jeans or sneakers. So now, of course, I like jeans and I like sneakers. And so
you just don't like shoes.
So I just don't like shoes a lot. And so what I did was I was running the invention team at the side. And I figured if you looked like a duck and walked like a duck, you were a duck. But if you looked different, then you were different. And we're talking about, you know, entrepreneurial, rapid testing, fail fast, fail cheap, real fast cycles. And so I told my team, I said, no, you don't wear suits. We don't do that stuff. But I said, let's follow this rule. They said, no jeans or sneakers on Fridays. I said, okay, got it. Okay. So true story, Monday through Thursday, we wore jeans and sneakers. And then on Friday, because it was only during Memorial to Veterans, you know, to Labor Day, for some reason in the equinox, that was the time when you should be allowed to do this. And so what I did is from Memorial Day to Labor Day, I wore shorts and flip-flops on Friday so that I didn't violate the rule. True story. The culture doesn't make you that way. You accept that. You put that in yourself. Get up. Come on. Life's meant to be lived. You can find in your sphere of influence. I mean, that's what we teach with our – we have a class, Innovation Engineering Fundamentals class, which teaches you how to transform your world. Screw the rest of the system. You have a sphere of influence. Let's get that started. Get started. Let's do something. You know, let's change how we're thinking. Let's change how we're working. Let's work smarter. Let's find new ideas and find new methods. Life is meant to be enjoyed.
Well, I think this is a good opportunity too to some of the courses that are offered through Innovation Engineering, whether it's at a university or at the Eureka Ranch, offered. It's not just for large organizations. It is for learning as individual. There's an online course that's available for folks to be able to take. And it's a, you know, I often think, Doug, I watch Shark Tank. I love watching Shark Tank. People come out there and I keep on thinking, you know, I wish they would have done some innovation engineering. I'd be curious to see how that would work. You know, if somebody's got an idea, but they don't know how to, you know, make it happen, they could use the innovation engineering system as an individual and take their product idea and take it through the system and learn new skills at the same time that can be used whether they're an entrepreneur starting a business or they just got an idea that they want to see, you know, if it'll work or taking it back to my organization. Their skills, their life skills, if you will, of things that they can be able to use. And the fact that you have an online and with support that they can really develop not only the ideas but the skills themselves.
Yeah, there's no barrier. I mean, you can go out of school, you can come to a public session, you can bring it into your company, you can take it online. Okay. The only barrier is you saying, I'm gonna get smarter this year. In 2019, I'm gonna get smarter. And I'm going to learn this. Whether it's in our case, we're teaching you how to think faster, smarter, more creatively, how to get things done, whatever it is. But what are you going to do to get smarter this year? You know, I had an old thing that I used to do at P&G. I stayed for 10 years, which is kind of amazing. It's the only job I've had because I'm unemployable other than that. But I had a rule, which is July 4th and January 1, I would look up and say, am I smarter than I was 6 months ago? Hmm. And every time I was, I put my head down and I just kept working because I figured I'm learning. And if you're learning, you're growing. One January, I put my head up and I wasn't, so I left. That's it. That's it. So are you smarter than you were 6 months ago? That's a challenge. If not, what are you going to do about it? Because if you're not getting smarter, you're dying. You're getting stupid. Stupid. We'll say it like they say in New York. Stupid. You know? So get over yourself. What are you doing to get smarter? Take our class if you want. Okay, that's a cheese ball promotion, but go for it. But do something. Do something.
Take a class.
I mean, you want to inspire your kids to keep learning? You know? Walk the talk. Walk the talk. Do you think the future is going to be less different or more different? Duh. So, what are you doing to stay up? I mean, at 88, my granny was doing it. What are you doing?
All right. Well, let's move on to the book segment. It's time now for the Driving Eureka book segment with author and inventor Doug Hall. So the secret to becoming smarter as you age, commit yourself to continuous learning. So this is a good segue from our first conversation. And it looks like you talked about in the newsletter, you're talking about stimulus. And we've talked a little bit about brainstorming versus using stimulus, and maybe we ought to just do a quick review, or why don't you do a quick review of that and then get into the deeper conversation of some of the stimulus mining which you really haven't gotten into before.
Yeah, so you've got a situation whereby when you're faced with a problem, whether it's a problem that you're trying to solve or a problem that you need a new idea or whatever it is, you need to open your mind. Now, the classic approach to creating ideas is called brainstorming, or I like to call it brain draining, as you suck ideas from your head. So ideas are feats of association. Two or more unrelated ideas connect to create a new idea. That's a fundamental philosophy. And so what we do is we say you need to gather – we turn it into a system and we say you need to gather some stimulus. And the stimulus can be of all kinds, and I won't go into them deeply, but it can be insights from your customers. It can be competitors. It can be technologies. It can be future trends. It can be experiential. But you've got to get stuff that you have to feed into your mental food processor to do it. So you have to go out and gather stimulus. Well, this is another way of saying learning. Hmm. You got to know more. You got to go out and learn and know more. And you go out and you go through a process. And in the Driving Eureka book, I go into it in more details about how to do this stimulus mining. On future episodes, we'll take them one at a time and do them. But you've got to go gather. The big premise this week is you got to know more. Before you try to make the decision, go out and learn more. Go talk to people. Go collaborate. Go connect. Ask people's opinions. Use that Google thing. I'm telling you, it's going to be big. It's going to really be big. You know, go learn something. Then gather that information together and start to do it. And in fact, our data shows we tracked teams when they had more stimulus and less stimulus. And they created significantly more meaningfully unique ideas. Big ideas that literally survived a three-day experience when they had more stimulus versus less stimulus. And so this learning thing is not just a crazed rant by a crazy old man. It's a fact. Those that know more are smarter, and they come up with more ideas and smarter ideas to not only new ideas, but to problem solve problems that they face in their daily life.
It's really quite amazing as you go through some of the different types of stimulus that you go through. And the one, I'm not going to go through all these, but the one that really stood out in my mind for whatever reason was the patent mining that you do, the really digging into, because it does spark ideas when you see what other people have thought about and what they've done. And you have a huge emphasis on patents as far as one of the outcomes that you want from the classes, whether it's at the university or at the ranch. And it's this whole concept of really opening your mind to things. And when you start reading, as you said in one of our previous episodes about going deep, this is going deep. This is really separating out. One of the questions I've always had about the different types of stimulus that you have is how did you arrive at the six things that you mentioned in the newsletter? So the wisdom mining, the patent mining, the market mining, insight mining, future mining, unrelated mining. And unrelated, it sounds like a miscellaneous category always to me.
Yeah. Well, it happened over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, originally there were four and then it became six because we split them off. And so those evolved as time went on. But speaking of the patent mining, I mean, think about it. Okay, there's millions of patents. Only 2% get commercialized because most of the time the people screw it up and they either don't communicate it well or just they don't have the funding or whatever. So you've got this database of ideas that are literally new to the world because you can't get a patent if an idea is obvious to somebody with skill in the art. So these are true inventions, not fake inventions, because – that's why I like to have patents as a standard. Whether you file or not, it's different. But I want your idea to be non-obvious to somebody with ordinary skill. If your idea isn't patentable, that means it's obvious to somebody with ordinary skill. And that doesn't sound very innovative to me. I'm sorry. You know, if you're going to go to all the trouble to do something new, you may as well own it. And so you've got all these people that have done it. You've got millions of patents. 90% plus are in the public domain. And when you file a patent, you have to make what's called an enabling disclosure so that somebody with ordinary skill could actually practice what you're doing. Okay, so you have to make it. So you've got a blueprint for how to do it, literally a blueprint for how to do it. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they're all – most of them are in the public domain. There's three types of patents. Let's just stay on the public domain one. So, but these ones in the public domain are free. And – they're in subclasses so that you can get, if you know what you're doing or if you have good software like the way our patent system is, we have the complete patent database and we've categorized it in a unique way to make it easy. But if you've got a system to be able to go into it with Flickr systems and such things, then you can literally get to the area that is very close to what you're working on, to the 20 to 50 that are right in your neighborhood, real close to what you're doing. And these things are all free. And oftentimes what I find is that I can go look at those, you know, over the last 100 years or whatever it might be, and I can look at those patents and I can see things. And, you know, maybe 40 years ago somebody did something and it wasn't practical because the world changed. But if I take a piece of that with another one from 10 years ago and another one from 5 years ago that went in the public domain, I can connect something that is non-obvious and create a whole new idea. I mean, why wouldn't the very first place you look when you're trying to invent an idea be the patent databases? I mean, it's just obvious.
Right.
It's absolutely obvious. Now, the barrier with it is one is the search engines are set up for lawyers, not for people inventing, which is why we had to build our own system for it. And the second thing is lawyers write horribly. I mean, they're just horrifically written and very hard to understand. And so that's why we have classes that teach you decoding of legalese so that you can start to understand it. But the fact of the matter is that if you want to learn a science, I mean, when I'm going to see a client and it's an area I don't know, I'll go look at the patents they filed in their competitors' file, and I'll sit in a room with business people and I'll say, well, that's interesting what you guys are looking at there. And most of the time, the executives will look at me and say, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, well, didn't you see the patent that your competitor just filed? And they go, what are you talking about? And I'm like going, my God, here we're starting from the rookies. I mean, come on, folks. This is not hard. It is not hard. I mean, I graduated with a 2 point something in chemical engineering. I'm not a genius, but I've got better systems. Learn the systems. Get the damn book. Read it. Do it. You can make this work. You just have to know more. But if you don't know, and they didn't teach you in school how to do it, then you can't do it. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's as simple as that.
And I think
read
I think,
the book. Take the class. I don't care what you do. Just listen to the damn podcast. But do something.
Yeah, there needs to be just a class on the patent piece. And I think I don't know because I'm not an engineer. You went through engineering school. I did not. But from an engineer standpoint, you guys get exposed to patents, I would assume.
No.
Okay.
Here's the stupid thing. I was at this meeting. They had me speak. 30 deans of innovation of engineering schools. Now, you know me. I'm a calm guy, right? So I asked, how many of you teach your students what is patentable and what is not? Just raise your hand. No one raised their hand. At that point, it went very badly. I lost my mind. I said, I can understand business people being stupid about patents, but what justification do you have for not teaching your students what is patentable and what is not? I mean, are we letting the lawyers make these decisions? How much do they freaking invent? I mean, this is nuts. It's nuts. Oh, by the way, it didn't turn out well. There was a reception afterwards. I was not a very popular. Didn't go so well. But come on, folks. Get over it. You know, 80% of the value of a corporation is their intellectual property. Is it going to be more technology or less technology? This is – don't even tell me that you're not into technology. Get over it. If you're not into technology, then okay, we'll make your health simple. We'll send you a country doctor, you know, and they'll bleed you to make sure, you know, to try to make you healthy. You know, don't tell me you're not into technology. Don't get on the plane. Don't get in. Don't you pull up your phone. Of course you're into technology. It's not negotiable.
Yeah.
We have to move forward.
Well, it's not just engineers, you know, and you mentioned, you know, you expect it from business school. So there's one thing about Deming, you know, who railed against what's being taught in business schools. You know, we know how to manipulate the financials, you know, and how to cost everything down to the penny. But the one thing that drives better financials is innovation and patents. And we never covered it. It was not, I mean, there was probably a mention in one of the classes, but there certainly wasn't.
Finance people should be able to evaluate a patent to determine if it's going to have a value to the company. Cause it's the biggest part of valuation. The entrepreneurship classes damn well should be teaching it. Mm. I mean, and oh, by the way, liberal arts, which is supposed to be arts and sciences. Okay, if there's a science that you should teach, maybe they don't need, you know, higher end physics, and maybe they don't need biology and physical chemistry, but they definitely need to know what is patentable and what is not. Everybody needs to know this. I mean, it's fundamental if they're going to make a difference in the world.
Yeah, no, I think so, and that's, you know, one of the things I know you guys. You know, hit it pretty heavy, but I'm just wondering if there, I don't think there is presently, and correct me if I'm wrong, Doug, but there isn't just a patent focused, it's a segment of what you're teaching in innovation engineering, but there's not a standalone, is there?
There are some classes that we do on a private basis for people, but there isn't a public thing that we do. I mean, companies set us up to do it for them. As they're using the software, we teach them on it. But it's not, you know, if you bring our Trailblazer software in, then we'll teach you how to do it. But right now it's embedded. There's four different classes on campus that we teach across our different courses. And so, you know, it's a component of what we do.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Well, let's move to our wait a minute. Before we move on, you have a table here of meaningfully unique ideas invented that high stimulus groups 47, medium stimulus groups 38, low stimulus groups 22. What are you telling me there?
What I'm telling you is that we more than double it. So if you want to make your brain smarter, mm-hmm. you can go from a 2.0 to a 4.0. Okay, no, not really. But you got the premise. I mean, it's really simple. Nothing in your head is nothing. Having stuff in your head, you get smarter. It's that simple. So if you're sitting in an empty room with a chart pad and saying think, that's called the suck method of creativity. Just bend over and kiss your butt goodbye. I mean, you got no chance. So you got to open yourself up.
All right. Well, let's move to the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy. This is the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy podcast, where we will take you behind the scenes so you can see what it takes to build a whiskey distillery business. The Eureka Ranch team, led by Doug Hall, are creating a craft whiskey company with patented technology like has never been done before. Always learning as a secret weapon. How are you using learning as your secret weapon?
Okay, so to get learning to become part of a culture, it's critical that the leader lead by example. You've got to be open to changing all the time. You've got to be open to changing all the time. And recently I was talking with some folks about our Noble Oak and our Relativity whiskeys, and people are tasting and saying, my God, that's amazing. I can't believe that. And, you know, they're like, man, how could you in just a couple of years win double gold in San Francisco, 95s, 2 of 8 double golds, you know? Okay, so what's the real secret? And these were like bourbon aficionados who basically started the conversation by saying, I don't think I'm going to like you. And at the end, they said, can I make a whiskey with you? So they said, what are you doing? How are you making this work? I said, it's easy. Learning. We never stop learning. That's our secret sauce. The two guys looked at me and they're like, you know, what do you think? We're idiots. No, come on. What really is it? And I go, no, it's embedded in the culture of Brain Brew and our sister company, Eureka Ranch, an addiction to learning, to always learning, never ending continuous learning. And that's just part of what we do. And as an example, so we've got this custom whiskey experience. It's very cool where people craft their own whiskey. And it works. And it works well and people like it. But, you know, Philip and I were looking at it and we said, it's kind of clunky. There's got to be a better way. And so we started looking for different things we could measure with, different ways we could put it together, different ways people could taste it. And, you know, we got in a whole bunch of different things and we just messed around with them and played with them. And we figured out a new way. And literally within a week, we had a whole new way of helping people put their whiskey together that was massively better. Okay. And interestingly, that same system for putting the whiskey together, we then looked at our cocktail experience where people taste and craft cocktails. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems with making cocktails is, you know, if whiskey costs even $25, $35, $40, you make a cocktail, it's a pretty expensive deal. And you can't make like 20 variations like we like to make because it can get pretty expensive for somebody. And I think one of the barriers to people finding their own personal cocktail is it costs too much. And so this measurement system that we had with these little spoons and different things that we were doing, what we found is we could create micro cocktails that are literally 10%. So 10% the size of a regular cocktail. And then we tested that and people could taste it and see if they liked it or not. Hmm. And so, you know, as we say, Eureka, you know, less waste, faster crafting, more options, much easier to make and taste. And so here we've just all set up with a thing going a whole nother direction. And this will be fine. And then 3 months from now, somebody will turn around, Peter or Joe or Philip or David or Tori and I, we'll look at it. We'll make something new. And we'll find another way of doing it. That's how it happens. So we live this. Anything that can be done can be redone, can be reinvented. That's the fundamentals of our success at Brain Brew Custom Whiskey.
That's cool.
So you got to get it in your culture. You got to get it in your culture. Never ending continuous change. That's the key.
Okay. So I remember I want to bring this into the conversation because we've talked kind of at a high level about your custom whiskey experience, you know, crafting your own personal whiskey. And you mentioned in here that it was clunky and slow. So can you paint me a picture of what it was and what it is that through learning that it's become now?
Well, I'm going to, in a broad sense, because there's some patent stuff that I'm going to do. So I'm going to give you a broad sense on it too, because it's kind of cool. It was just the way people mixed the cocktails together, the cocktails, or they put their own whiskey together. It was the way they would do the blending, the way people had to measure and assemble a product one way versus a new way. And so we had to change that. That's all. That's all it was.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I didn't want to upon your secrets.
The good news on the whiskey side is the government's back in business. And we're recording this. The government's back in business. And that means the TGV, our transfer and bond, and our labels are now, in theory, moving forward again. Because it has been a total shutdown for all of the alcohol in America, because all of our new stuff for the new year literally shut down. Without approvals. So
how does that change the timeline for you? I mean, you still can't distill something, right, at the ranch?
I don't intend to ever distill stuff at the ranch.
Oh, okay.
You know, we buy spirits, and we put all of our money in the aging, because 70% of the flavor comes from the wood. So our whole focus is time compression of the wood. I mean, we've got a still, which we'll use for some experiments, but then we'll take it out because they can make it faster and better quality and at a better price than we can make it.
Okay.
I mean, that's the reality. You know, when you put it fully loaded, it's much cheaper to do it with other people. So that's how we work it. So we move forward. We will be, it all goes forward.
So what has to happen for you to be open then from where we sit today? You said you were waiting for labels and I forget what the other thing was.
I mean, we're open now, running through Boone County. So we have another distiller that the bottles are done under his license over in Kentucky. And so we make products there. So we're still open, but we're not going to be a traditional. I mean, our whole focus is a B2B deal where we're going to work with distillers. So I mentioned last week, we're going to be at the ACSA, the American Craft Spirits Association's convention in Minneapolis, February 10, 11, and 12, talking to folks. We're going to look for a few pioneers to sign on to become part of the journey for us as we go through beta testing this year for then expanded. But it basically allows craft distillers to make more money. It allows them to make a higher margin and not have to wait months and years for whiskey. They can make a profit immediately. Their own product, unique taste, their wood, which is where the real value added is, put it. I should also mention that February 24 to 26, the Innovation Engineering team is in New York City at the League of Innovation in community colleges. We'll have a booth there, and we're meeting with community college people. I'm speaking to, I guess, 1,500 people, doing the leadership, and then we're doing workshops on Monday. But February 3, 4, and 5, February 24, 25, and 26, we're in New York City. So see us in Minneapolis, see me in New York. Would love to connect with folks.
Okay, very good. Let's move to your craft cocktail recipe, the Brain Brew Whiskey Sour. So I'm going to guess that this is something a little bit different than the traditional whiskey sour.
Yeah. So Philip, who heads R&D for us, is a chef, a phenomenal chef. And his sour mix, so let me tell you what you don't do for a whiskey sour, is buy one of those sugar concoction jugs of sour mix.
Wait a minute, that's what I do.
Just toss it. Just throw it away. Instead, the secret to this, the sour is the number one rated cocktail, even among whiskey drinkers in our recent research, which was pretty amazing. And so the key is the sour mix. And so it's a half cup of sugar, half cup of water, and a quarter cup each of lime, lemon, and orange juice. And by the way, that's fresh lime, lemon, and orange juice.
Okay.
And you do the zest from the limes, lemons, and oranges.
What do you mean, the zest?
You take a grater and take some of the skin and get some of the zest in it.
Okay. All right.
And ideally what you do is you just heat it up gently for it all to meld together, and then cool it. And you can filter out the zest if you want. I like to keep it in, but you can filter it out. And then you can keep this in the fridge, and it'll stay for a week or so. It goes down as time goes on, but it'll still be amazing. And so this is something where you've got, you know, you got basically, you know, only a half cup of sugar, 3/4 of a cup of juices, a half cup of water. So it's not overly sweet, but my God, the balance of the lime, lemon, and orange just gives you a depth that is just blow your brains out. And then the cocktail is simple. It's a 1-to-1 mix. So an ounce and a half of Phillips sour mix with an ounce and a half of our Relativity product. You know, stir it up with some ice and, you know, garnish it with a cherry if you want. And enjoy something that is truly, there is no one in the world that won't think that this is an amazing drink. If you want to make it more whiskey forward, use rye instead of, you know, an American whiskey, you know, a 4-grain type product, but an amazing drink, a truly amazing drink. Right. Even for whiskey drinkers, and whiskey drinkers can be tough because they can sometimes not like these things. But this isn't too sweet. It's I don't know. It's got depth. I mean, because bringing the three different juices and the zest in just gives you a more multidimensional nature to this cocktail that just makes it so much more interesting and really works with the whiskey.
Okay, and I noticed that you switched up on me here. You said add it to ice and stir it 12 times. What's up with that?
Oh, it's just I want to keep you on your toes.
Was that a typo or are you messing with me?
I just want to keep you on your toes.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Okay. But stir it a few times anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. One question I did have for you, Doug, on this is when you get the zest from the fruit, is there a tool or something that you use to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you're just using a grater. I mean, you can use the thin side of a box grater, but usually there's some different culinary ones that you just, you know, you can, zesters, that there are such things as zesters. So there's a number of different ways to do it.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. So what do you think we might have upcoming? What are we going to be talking about in Brain Brew?
I don't know. I mean, we've got a bunch of stuff happening. I try to keep this very real to what's really happening and thinking. We've got a whole bunch of academics coming to the ranch this week coming up that are going to push us with regards to learning as we expand innovation engineering to hundreds of schools, to universities. I've got a bunch of data stuff we're doing. We've got more research experiments on the whiskey side that's happening. And then I'll be up at the I'll be up in Minneapolis, and obviously out of Minneapolis, there'll be all kinds of stuff. And the trip to New York will also have tons of stuff. So I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I just let life come as it comes.
All right. Very good. All right. Well, we thank you for joining our show this week, and we look forward to whatever adventures Doug's got coming for us in weeks to come.
Yeah. The fundamental thing is get up, get out, get going. Let's start learning and not get more stupid.
Oh, so we're going to end this with stupid. All right. Very good. Because we appreciate you as a listener, we are offering for limited time four things. A 1-hour abridged audio of the Driving Eureka book. A subscription to the Driving Eureka newsletter, which contains weekly advice from Doug Hall on how to find, filter, and fast-track big ideas. And the newsletter has other offers that are not made public. the Driving Eureka prescription for success. You answer questions and we'll help you assess your ability to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And you get advice on how to grow your ability to innovate. And the last item, access to a Doug Hall interview with a radio legend. To get these offers, go to www.DougHall.com/podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the Driving Eureka podcast on iTunes.